Starting here on the top of Yud Chet Amud Av, two lines down, the Gemara is trying to answer the question about Amana Minei Rusim Dit La Ktuba Minolan. How do you know that an Amana Minei Rusim is entitled to a Ktuba? Yesterday we discussed the difficulty in that question itself. Underlying that question is an assumption that an Amana Minei Rusim doesn't have a Ktuba, or the fact that the Gemara is searching for that. So we discussed that there are different Rishonim who view or take the question in different manners. But the reason we're searching for that is because that is Abaye's proof that the Mishnah that we brought is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rabbi Yochanan made the statement that any Maseh Beit Din, you can't be toying achar Maseh Beit Din, or it's the equivalent of holding a shtar in your hand when Beit Din's tnai or conditions or takanot support you, and therefore nobody has a right to say parati. I paid it, because every time he says he paid it, you showed up with the contract again because you have Beit Din backing you up. So then, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba brought the Mishnah supportive for Rabbi Yochanan, and Abaye said, why is the Mishnah supportive of Rabbi Yochanan? It's because of the fact that you can't read it any other way, because otherwise, how would an Amana min Erusim collect her Ketubah? Because what documentation does she have? What evidence does she have the fact that she's entitled to her ketubah? Because we don't write a ketubah to an almana min erusin. Must be that it's backed up by a tnai beit din or a taknat beit din, and that's what gives her the right to collect. So then the Gemara asks the pivotal question, how do you know that an almana min erusin is entitled to a ketubah? You're making an assumption that she's entitled to a ketubah. Therefore, how does that have tokef? How does that have force or teeth within the law? So the Gemara is now questioning the underlying assumption that an Amana has a Ketubah Min Erusin. So yesterday we tried to bring one proof, and today we're going to bring a second proof. Ella, Minitani Rav Chiya Ba'ami, Ishto Arusa Lo Onein Velo Mitamila. His wife, who is engaged to him halachically but not married to him, he may not, as a Kohen, be an Onein for her, or Mitamila. If he's an Onein, then he's precluded from partaking in certain items in certain kodoshim, and mitame lo, he has a restriction, a kohen, against becoming tamei, except for one of the seven relatives. She is within the rubric of those seven relatives, and therefore he would become tamei to her, or we would force him to become tamei if he was obligated. But over here it says, lo onen, velo mitame la, v'chein hi, and the same is true in the reverse. Lo onenet, velo mitame lo. She doesn't have a status of an onenet, and she also does not become Tmeyah for him. Now, in terms of her perspective, obviously Onenet does have impact on the woman. The fact that she's not an Onenet, the status of Onen, doesn't just have impact by Kodashim, it has impact in terms of your Chiyuv in the Mitzvot in general. But as far as Mitamalo, that's a very difficult statement, because not a Kohenet nor Israelit is Mitzuvah on the Inyan of Tumah. Tumah is only applicable to Kohanim, it's not applicable to Kohanot. And so then, what is the issue of lo mitame lo? Lo mitame lo means that there's a restriction against her becoming Tmeyah. What restriction exists for her? So Rashi in Yevamot says that the restriction is that it was karov l'regel, that it was near the regel, and therefore there's a requirement to be mitare yourself approaching the regel, and that's a restriction we're speaking about. It's a general restriction against people coming Tmeyim, and therefore here, she should not become Tmeyah, because that would affect her going into the regel. Tosfot over there rejects Rashi's explanation and says, similar to what Rashi says over here, it's just a practical statement, which is that she has no obligation towards him. She does not have to take care of this mate. He is not considered to be one of the seven relatives that she would become Tmeyah for, Tmeyah being a code word, responsible for. She doesn't have to take care of the Kura. She doesn't have to deal with him. If she so chooses, obviously she wants to, she can, because she's entitled, or she can become Tmeyah. But as far as an obligation, she has no obligation over here to deal with this mate. In the Suwa, then the obligation would devolve upon her. Meta, if she passes away, Eina Yorsha, he does not inherit her. Metu, if he dies, Govak Tubata, she's entitled to her Ketubah. So here it seems to be good evidence of the fact that an Arusa is entitled to a Ketubah, because here, when he passes away, she gets to collect her ketubah. It says, Dilma Dichtovla, who says that it's a case where there's no ketubah over here. Maybe he voluntarily wrote a ketubah to this arusa. But the default scenario of an arusa would be that she would not be entitled to a ketubah. You say he wrote a ketubah, then what's the chiddush in the Mishnah that the fact that she's entitled to collect her ketubah, if he wrote her a ketubah, then of course she can collect the ketubah. Anytime someone obligates themselves, it's a contractual obligation, it's not a halachic obligation. So why is that a chiddush over here? So when it says, Maila Memra, Meita Eni Yosha, Itzrichale. So there is a chiddush in this, so it's the fact that if she passes away, he does not inherit her. That is because they stem from what's called Hashero HaKarov Elav. Shero HaKarov Elav is what includes a wife in a lot of these obligations or in these halachot. So for instance, when it comes to Tum'ah, the requirement of a Kohen not to become Tamei has exceptions. In those exceptions, it says Ki Im L'Shero HaKarov Elav, to someone who is close of kin. So if there, the Maradashans of Ki Im L'Shero HaKarov Elav refers to a wife. So that a Kohen becomes Tamei for his wife because she's called Shero HaKarov Elav. So Shero HaKarov Elav is the obligation in the Torah that connects the husband to the wife. So in this case, we're not invoking the principle of Shero HaKarov Elav, which is we're not invoking it with regards to Tumah. We're also not invoking it with regards to Meita Eni Yosha with Yerusha. Because Yerushat, it says, Mishero HaKarov Elav, Mimishpachto, V'Yarashota. Meaning that the Pasuk also uses the term She'iro when it comes to Yerusha. And there too you need what's called Kiruv Basar or Akarov Elav. And she is not considered to be She'iro while she is in Arusa. So here you have a preclusion from Tuma because it lacks She'iro. You have a preclusion from Yerusha because you lack She'iro. But we're letting her collect the Ketubah. And so the Chiddush here is, despite the fact that she's collecting the Ketubah, which seems to indicate that there is some sort of monetary relationship between them, nevertheless, he doesn't inherit her. So there is no quid pro quo with regards to the monetary inheritance. The woman's inheritance or collection as a wife is the fact that she's able to collect her ketubah. The husband is that he inherits his wife. So you would have thought that there was some sort of equality between them. Therefore, if the wife gets a ketubah, he should be able to inherit her. But the chiddush, according to this, of that Mishnah, is the fact that we don't say that. And that even though she's collecting her ketubah, he does not inherit her. And that would be the chiddush. Even if you wrote the ketubah, and what are you saying? Okay, of course they have a contractual obligation. No, but that contractual obligation focuses on a monetary relationship of a husband-wife. So if you're allowing the wife to collect the ketubah, maybe you should allow the husband to collect the yerusha. The answer is no, we don't let the husband collect the yerusha. But then based on that now, we have failed in our two attempts to find a source for the fact that and Arusa is entitled to a ketubah. And therefore, Abaye's whole premise of his proof from the Mishnah, in a sense, falls away. Because he said the reason I can prove that the Mishnah is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan is because otherwise what would you do with an Arusa? Where it goes, okay, I don't know what you're going to do with an Arusa, but maybe Arusa doesn't get a ketubah at all. And if that's the case, then there's no proof from the Mishnah. So now we have to go back to square one and figure out why did Abaye think that this was supportive of Rabbi Yochanan? At first he questioned it and said maybe it's not supportive. Then he rejected his own rejection of the Mishnah by saying Arusa. But Arusa, we're not finding what we need there, which is a proof that Arusa is really entitled to a ketubah. Again, we discussed yesterday what the implications of that are, what the Rishonim believe about that. But now, El Abaye mi gufo de matnitin kahadarbe. Now, Abaye, from the actual Mishnah itself, was able to prove the fact that that is the case. If you think that the case in the Mishnah that we brought as a proof to Rabbi Yochanan is talking about a case where they don't write a ketubah, the get hainu ketubata, and therefore the get will act as the document of ketubah as well. She wants to collect her ketubah, she shows up with the get, and that's how she collects her ketubah. Atu get mane matayim ktivbe. Since when does the get have 100 or 200 written in it? What is entitling her to a ketubah? A get is just a document of divorce. It is not a document that evidences any ketubah or any amount that would be paid as a ketubah. So now, that means that the get itself can't be generating the obligation. So what is generating the obligation? V'chitema came into tekinu rabbanon lemigvala. Since the rabbanon were mitakein that she has the right to collect with the get, Kaman dichtiv beidami. Then it's as if it's written in the get. I mean, it's like almost an appendix to the get. Is that the chachamim say when you show up with your get, you get this, and it's as if it's written in the get. Liton velema parati. Then the husband should have a right to say, I paid it back. He could make a claim that I paid it back. Meaning that if you don't have a maisa beitin on the other side, all you have is the get. And the get underlying the get is not really anything more than a contractual obligation that says technically the ketubah is included in it. Then he could say, parati, I paid it back. And he should be believed that he paid it back because it makes sense that he already paid it off. V'chitema damrin le, maybe we'll reject his claim and say to him, if you really paid back the ketubah, you should have ripped up the get. Meaning that if the get is the document of evidence to get her the ketubah, if you paid, you should have insisted that we rip up the get in order to protect you from what you're saying, which is she'll keep showing up at the get. Amalan lo shavaktan said she didn't let me. Amra be'inan lin suvebe. I need the get to get married. So I can't give it up to you. I'm not giving it to you to rip it up because otherwise I'm going to have no evidence of the divorce to get married. You should have ripped it up. And then right on the back of the get, gita denan de kranuhu, this get that we ripped up, lo mishim de gita psulahu, not because it was a get pasul, eloki heched lo tikbe be zimnachrite. That basically Beitin will endorse the back of the get that is ripped up and say that the ripping up the get was so that she can't collect her ketubah again, but not to say that the get wasn't a valid get. So now, that sounds like a reasonable solution to the problem, which is she'll hold on to the pieces of the get, but it'll have an endorsement of Beitin saying that it's still a valid get, but obviously she will not be able to collect with it anymore because it's ripped up. So now we've solved the problem. If that's the case, the Baal has no claim of parati, because if it was parati, the get should be ripped and have an endorsement of Beitin on the back. The fact that it's not means that he didn't pay it back. They're probably afraid of, I'm just speculating here, that you, if you did that, you could erase the back, meaning that they, in those days, you could just scrape out the back, and there's no evidence of tampering because the whole front is intact, right? Who says the back wasn't erased beforehand? You want it ripped because that's the clearest evidence. So now, using that, you could say to the Baal, you have no claim of parati because you didn't comply with what we would have expected here, but just get the get gripped up and get a Beitin endorsement. And when it says, Ato called Megave Bebeidina Megave, not everybody is going to court to collect. So now, that solution is a solution if you're in court. Because then the court will endorse the back of the document saying that it was a get kasher. If you do this outside of Beitin, which in many cases, if you have honest people here, they don't need to go to court in order to get divorced and then pay off the get. They can do it outside the auspices of court. If they do that and you rip up the get, who's endorsing the back of the get now? You don't have it in Beitin. So since a lot of these transactions take place outside of Beitin, that's not a fair claim on the husband to say, why didn't you get it endorsed by Beitin in the back and have it ripped up? The answer is, we didn't do it in Beitin. That's why we didn't have that option. So if you don't say over here that there is a Maisa Beitin supporting her ability to collect, then the husband will have a right to say, parati, I paid it back. And if he has a right to say parati, she no longer has any real claim over here in order to get her money. Because even when she shows up the document, it's not enough evidence. But if you say that a Maisa Beitin carries enough weight that parati is invalid because the parati is not good enough against the Maisa Beitin because it's as if she's holding an evidence in her hand, it's as if she's holding a ketubah in her hand, then at that point, then you could argue then that the husband can't argue parati, and that's why she is in a good position because she can always collect with that as if she has a ketubah. So that's what Abaye's point is, that it must be that this is considered to be a Maisa Beitin. And that's what's giving her the right of collection over here, is because we deem it to be a Maisa Beitin. Had it been just for the get or the document itself, then you would have her word against his word. She has a get. He says, I paid it. There's no evidence in the get to the contrary that he didn't pay it. And there's no evidence that she's not entitled to it. But then you have a stalemate because we don't know who's speaking the truth then. Did he pay it or is she entitled to ketubah? But once you give her the power of a Maisa Beitin, then she's always got the trump card, because then she's holding a document that says he owes her money. And if that's the case, then the burden of proof is on him, and she will always have the right of collection. And that's what it sounds like from the Mishnah that we brought in support of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that when it comes to a get, it says, Otzio get, ve'enimo ketubah. She takes out a get, and there's no ketubah with it. Govak to Bata. She has a right of collection. She has a right of collection because Beit Din gave her that power to collect as if she has a ktuba in hand. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking to say that when you have something that is a Maisa Beit Din, that there is no claim against that. And that's what we have from this Mishnah now, that there is no claim against that. It's not coming because of the document of the get, it's coming because of the enhancement that Beit Din gave her, the right of collection, as if she's holding a ktuba. And that proves Rabbi Yochanan's position, and that's where Abaye got it from the Mishnah. Nothing to do with an arusa and a ktuba, but simply from the fact that she has a right of collection with this quote-unquote ktuba that doesn't exist. Next Mishnah. Matzagi teinashim vishichurei avadim daitiki matana vishovrim harizelo yakzir. So this should be a Mishnah that's familiar to you because we quoted back on Daf Yud Gimel, which is that if you find documents, bill of divorce, a document of emancipation, a last will and testament, daitiki is usually a documentation of his oral instructions on his deathbed, which is sabat shchimera, a gift or receipts, harizelo yakzir, don't give them back. Shani omer ktuvim ayu v'nimlach lehem. The person wrote them and then regretted or reneged on what he wanted to do. Shalodit nan, and therefore never gave them. So the fear is that this did not fall from the recipient of whatever document is here, but rather from the giver of the document. The person had considered taking this action or doing whatever is mentioned here, whether it's getting a divorce, whether it's freeing the slave, but then he decided that he didn't want to do it. He already had the contract or the documentation drawn up, but then he backs out of it. So now when we find the document, we can't be certain that it fell from the recipient and that is their entitlement and we should give it back to them. Or is this coming from the grantor of this document? And the problem is that maybe he never gave the document and the document does not have validity. So we can't return it to that person. So the Mishnah says, don't return it. Now the Gemara makes a diok out of the Mishnah. Taimo denimlach, shlo nitan. Our Mishnah is a case because we assume that he changed his mind about giving them. Hamar tznu, had he said, I gave them or give it, notnim, we would comply and give it. Vafilu lizman merubeh, even for a long duration. So the Gemara is medayik out of the Mishnah. It's not so simple how the Gemara is medayik out of the Mishnah. You can see there's a large Tosafot over here trying to grapple with exactly how the Gemara is medayik this out of the Mishnah. Some say it's because there's a bright on the second half of today's daf that actually explicitly makes that distinction, and therefore they're superimposing that on this Mishnah. But it seems to be the fact that the Mishnah gives this particular reason as being the major reason, which it didn't mention in other Mishnayot, that this is a fundamental part of why we don't give back documents. And therefore the diuk is that since the Mishnah gives you this reason, that if we're able to overcome that reason, then you would be able to give the document back. The way to overcome that reason is simply to say that he said, give it to them. That he's instructing them that I'm okay with you giving it to them, either because the event already took place or because he wants the divorce to go through. He wants the freeing of the slave to go through. So we should comply with his instructions in that case. But complying with his instructions is even if the date on the document is way back in history. He says, give it to them, and we're okay with that. But we have a problem, which is the Mishnah in Gittin says, person brings a get. He's a shliach to deliver a get and loses the get. Mitzaola altar, if he finds it immediately, kasher, then the get is fine. Vimlav, if not, it is pasul. So here you have a Mishnah in Gittin that says that if there's a duration in time which the document is missing, you don't continue and give the document. It's only if it's found immediately. So over there, so now when it comes to the Mishnah in Gittin, we say that duration causes a problem, which is if you find it immediately, meaning before the next public something comes through there and changes the dynamic of the situation, because now we have to suspect that it came from the other groups of individuals that came there. If he finds it in that period of time, then we're fine. But as soon as more people enter in the fray and we have a chashash that it might have come from somewhere else, all of a sudden over there we say no good anymore. Yet, by the Baal, where the document is found, and we don't have any time frame on that or time limit on that, and he says, go ahead and give it, we give it without asking any questions. Why is that? Why by the shliach are we worried about some invalidation of the get because of the elapsement of time? Yet by the husband, you don't worry about any invalidation of the get. We'll see in a second that the main problem is that maybe this is someone else's get. You didn't find the get that you lost. You found another document. It happens to have the same names. So since the gittin are the same, we're afraid now that you're actually handing over a get that is not the get that was the original document. And that is a get pasul. So by a shaliach, we have that problem. By the baal, we don't have that problem. Why would you differentiate? There shouldn't be any difference between them. It depends on the traffic flow that is in the place there. In a place where you have heavy traffic that's going through there, then you have to worry about the fact that maybe somebody else showed up with a get, and this get fell from them, and you have to worry about the mix-up in gitin. In a place where there's no heavy traffic, we can assume that the get that you dropped is the get that you're picking up, because there's not a lot of traffic to say that someone else dropped the get over here. Even in a place where you have heavy traffic, Rabbi says that you need another piece to the puzzle, which is that we know for certain that there are two people with this name. It has to be not only that there are two people with this name, but two people with this name and with wives with the same names. I mean, that we need evidence of the fact that this confusion or issue could come up. So in a case where we're dealing with no traffic, we don't worry about it because it's unlikely that anybody else dropped the get over here because there's not enough people going through here to suspect that. And that'll be supported by the circumstantial evidence that they lost the get. So even though we know that there are two people with that name, we know one party lost the get and we found a get. So in all likelihood, if there isn't heavy traffic over there, the get that was lost is the get that we found. But even in a case where we have heavy traffic and you would suspect that maybe someone else dropped the get, you still need an underlying problem, which is that we know that there are people with this name out there, or people with the similar names, both first names, last names, or parents' names, husband, wife, because then already you can make a claim that there's a possibility that the gittin were exchanged. Dilote ma'ochi, if you don't say that, kasha d'rabba d'rabba. Then otherwise you have a problem of a stira in rabba. Dao gito, dishtakach beidina d'rabuna. There was a get that was found on the floor somewhere in the Beit Din of Rav Huna. Davakotu Bey, that said in the document, this is what was in there, Bishvire Mato Dalrakis Naro. So that the city of Shvire, it sounds like this is not actually a city, but more like a suburb or a subsection of this city that is on the banks of the river. So that's the identifying location. Amar Rav Huna, Chashina L'Shnei Shvire. We worry about the fact that there might be two locations with the same name. So now, Rav Huna is seemingly saying that even without knowledge of the fact that there is another city with that name, or there are other people with those names, we're choshesh for the fact that this contract or this get fell from someone with the same name or places with the same name, and therefore you can't give it back or it's not a valid document anymore. V'amalei Rav Chista l'Rabbo. So Rav Chista went to Rabba and said, "Poke ayin bolo, go and look into this issue." To the Urta Bayminach, Rav Huna. Because tonight, he's going to check up on this issue with you. He's going to ask you about this case. I mean that he's working through this case. Rabba is working with Rav Huna, or he gives advice to Rav Huna on these issues. So Rav Huna already said we should be chayish for this. And now he wants to check into the matter with Rabba. According to many, that's not a psak of Rav Huna then. Because Rav Huna, if he's going to check with Rabba, it means that he didn't come to a final conclusion. He was just saying, maybe we should be choshesh for this. So then, when he goes to ask Rabba for advice, then he would come to his final conclusion. There are others that believe that Rav Huna really passed in this way, and Rabba is going to reject that psak of Rav Huna. Part of that might have to do with the nature of their relationship, which is, if it's a judge and a clerk, it might be that Rabba gave advice, and then Rav Huna would have complied with that. Rabba wouldn't have gone out independently and decided like that. If Rabba already has enough standing on his own, and this is just a peer review of some sort, then you could argue that Rav Huna has this position, and Rabba took the opposing position, and that's why we're going to see in a second that Rabba paskin like his own position, despite the fact that Rav Huna did not paskin that way. So, depending on what you think the exact nature of the relationship is, it would matter about what you thought about Rav Huna, whether he's giving a psak halacha, or a suggestion of psak, because Rabba in the end is clearly going to disagree with Rabbi Huna. So the question of whether he could disagree with quote-unquote his Rebbe, or someone who was much more senior than him, obviously plays in here. And so therefore you would want to believe, if that was the relationship that Rav Huna then followed Rabba's psak, and he's not disagreeing with it. And the evidence of that is that the Gemara is going to bring an opposing opinion. It does not quote Rav Huna as the opposing opinion. Others believe that Rav Huna disagreed with him, and therefore that you have to say that Rabba had a certain amount of independence. He was not subject to the Beit Din of Rav Huna, and therefore he could give advice to him as a peer, but that means he wasn't subject to whatever Rav Huna's ruling is over here. And then Rav Huna could technically paskin differently than Rabba. And he says, go take a look into this, because he's going to query you in the evening about this. Nafak dak v'ashkach. He went ahead and found the Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Kol maaseh Beit Din, harizeh yachzir. That any action of the Beit Din, you have to give back. V'ha Beit Din ad Rav Huna, dechi makom sherot shemutziol domi. The Beit Din of Rav Huna is a case where you're dealing with heavy traffic. This is a popular Beit Din. It's a very central Beit Din. So a lot of people there. V'kal pashit Rabba deyachzir. And Rabba said you give it back. How could Rabba conclude that you give it back? He's suggesting now you have a Maisa Beit Din, which the get is a Maisa Beit Din. We'll discuss that in a second. Alma, Ihus Kuku, Shnei Yosef Ben Shimon, in Ilolo. The only way that you could conclude that Rabba is making sense here is that even though you have heavy traffic and you should suspect that there are other people here, the reason Rabba didn't say that is because we just don't know of other people with that name. We don't have what Rav Huna says, Choshesh. We're not chayish that maybe there's somebody with that name. Maybe there's another city with that name. No, we're not choshish for that. And that's what Rabba says in the end. Even though there's heavy traffic, the lack of evidence that there's someone with the same name makes it that we don't give it back. And so that's what the Gemara said here. You have to think that Rabba believes that. Otherwise, Rabba's psak over here where he says, shayrot mitzurot makes it problematic. And then over here he's saying that shayrot mitzurot doesn't make it problematic. How do you reconcile between those two? The difference being whether we have chuskuku, whether we actually know that there are other people with that name or don't know that there are other people with that name. And that would explain Rabba's position and keep him consistent in the two piskei halacha. So that's why here it's talking about shayrot. That's exactly why. Because it's irrelevant what the size of the city is, because shayrot bring people from the outside. So the Gemara's cases are either cases in the shuk, where you have shayrot coming through, major thoroughfares, or you're talking about Beit Din Rav Huna, where you have major influx of populations that are not necessarily resident here. So that's the question. Do we have to be suspect of those people that are coming through with the same name? And again, Rabba qualifies that and says, yes, volume makes a difference, but only again if we know for certain that someone else with this name. Without that evidence to back it up, we're not going to say that. Now, here Rabba brings a proof in the Mishnah that says, kol maaseh Beit Din, which assumes here that the get is a din or has a maaseh Beit Din involved with it. Rashi explains the case. Because, as we said before, once you have an approval or validation of Beit Din, you don't have to worry about maybe he was thinking about giving it and then gave it, because Beit Din were only validated if it was actually given. Rashi says this get was validated in Beit Din, and that's why it ended up there. It was in the Beit Din because someone was getting it validated and then dropped it. But the fact that you have a validation in it is already evidence that it is a Maisa Beit Din. Once it's a Maisa Beit Din, you give it back, because then you don't have to worry about this idea of maybe he didn't give it or maybe he changed his mind about it, because you have a Maisa Beit Din. So Maisa Beit Din overcomes the issue of he had thought about giving it but didn't give it. It does not overcome the problem that maybe this is a get that belonged to someone else and was also validated in Beit Din. That's overcome by Rabba's position that you need both Sheirot Mitsuyot and Huskuku in order for it to be invalid, the get. And that you don't have here. Here you have heavy traffic, but you do not have Huskuku. And that's why Rabba says that the get you can give back without any problem. So that's the way Rashi learns it. Tosafot is reluctant to accept Rashi's explanation because he thinks that Rashi's mixing and matching different cases. And that is that Rashi is seemingly saying that you have a shliach that's bringing a get, and then the shliach drops the get and then finds it. That's what we're trying to explain here. That's how we're trying to solve the case here, is why when he drops it do we worry about it? So now you have the shliach dropping the get, and now he picks it up. The get will never be validated if the shliach is bringing the get. Because the shliach brought the get, he never gave it to the woman yet. If he didn't give it to the woman yet, Beit Din's not validating it. But Tosafot sees them as being mutually exclusive cases. You can't have a shliach carrying a get and have Beit Din validate it. Because if Beit Din validated it, it means the get was given already. It fell from the woman, not from the shliach. If the shliach's carrying it, then it's clearly not validated in Beit Din yet, because it wasn't given to the woman as of yet. So Tosfot says he doesn't think Rashi is right here about the Maisa Beit Din, but rather he says that the scenarios are the following. V'yesh lamar, ikotiv bei henpek. If there is a validation of Beit Din in it, Myri shenafal min eisha. Our assumption is that it fell from the woman. Not that it fell from a shliach, but it fell from the woman, because the validation is indicative of the fact that she already was in possession of the get. So you don't give it back to a shliach, you give it to the woman herself. So he says, Ve'im mimayri b'shaliach. He says, if it's a case of a shliach carrying the get, sholo the garesha t'isha, yesh lamar t'lok t'i bo henpek. Then you have to say that it's a case where there's no validation of Beit Din in it, because there can't be a validation of Beit Din if the shliach is still carrying it. Now you're in a bind. If it's a shliach bringing it and there's no validation of Beit Din, how do we know that they didn't change his mind? So the answer is that, if you remember, there was a takana put in place that we learned in a Gemara in Gittin, which is that you're not allowed to rescind a get once it goes with a shliach. Technically, the principal has a right to pull the shlichut whenever he wants. Even without notifying the shliach, he can pull the shlichut and say, I don't want him to be my proxy anymore. If he does that before the get reaches the woman, the get is invalid. We discussed, there's a machloket tanaim about what exactly happens there, but there is a takanat chachamim that we don't allow you to do that anymore because the risks are too high. What happens is he's going to pull the rug from under the shliach. The shliach has no idea. He'll deliver the get to the woman and she'll get married based on that get. So the chachamim said there's no rescinding of a shliach without the baal seeing face to face with the shliach. So then he notifies the shliach. Once he notifies the shliach's not going to go give the get now. Once he was notified, that's an invalid get. So that's what Tosfot says. The reason we don't have to worry about him reneging on the get is because we have the shliach here, and the shliach hasn't seen the baal. He says, I haven't seen the owner since I came, I lost the get, I gotta deliver it. Well, if he needs to deliver it, that means that the baal gave him rights of delivery, and he's yet to rescind those rights because he hasn't seen the baal. And that's what gives us the security. There's no change in his mindset or the giving of the get. So Tosfot breaks the cases up into two pieces. Rashi claims it's a shliach and a henpek. It's not so clear in Rashi that he says shliach. It's just implicit in what he's saying. But he's saying you have Beit Din validated it and you have a shliach. Tosfot says the two can't go together. But they're two separate cases. Either it's the woman with the henpek or it's a shliach without a henpek. Which means that the shliach himself creates the validation because he never saw the owner since he sent them. That means that he didn't change his mind. The woman with the henpek is also a validation, which shows you that they ended up with the woman and you don't have to worry about it anymore. So either of those scenarios, we don't have to worry about that. The only thing we have to worry about is a duplication, which is the possibility that someone else has these names and this was someone else's get. That we don't worry about because lo huksuku. According to Rabbo, we don't say that because we don't have evidence of the fact that there are people with these same names in this area. So now the Gemara says, Ovad Rabba Uvda Beikitna de Pumpetita Kishmate. Rabba Paskin Alocha, like his Shita, in the Beikitna, we'll discuss what that is in a minute, the Pumpetita, in this area Pumpetita, and so therefore he put his money where his mouth was, and he Paskin based on what he thought over here. So that's why I was saying to you before, the fact that Rabba's Paskining over here means that, in all likelihood, Rav Huna was seeking his advice and also passing that way and changed his mind. Some say that it was the shuk where you bought flax. It was the flax shuk. And that was a case where we don't have evidence of two people having the same name. If you say that Beit Kitna means the flax shuk, that means we're talking about a place with heavy traffic. So now that means that Rabba believes that even though there's heavy traffic, the fact that we don't have evidence of someone else with the same name, that's enough to say that you can take the get back and you don't have to worry about it. Some say it's where they soak the flax. So now, in the place where they soak the flax, no traffic, it's not heavy traffic area. Even though we know that there are other people with that same name in the city, because over there is not heavy traffic. So what you see from Rabba, based on this, the two ikadamres is, Rabba requires both in order to invalidate the get. He needs heavy traffic and evidence of the fact that there's someone else with that name. Otherwise, if you only have one, he will not invalidate the get. And meaning clearly argues on Rav Huna's premise before of Chayshinan, L'shnei Shvirei. We worry about the possibility that there are two places with that name. Rabba says, we don't worry about anything unless we have evidence of the fact that there are others with that name, other cities with that name, all that. Plus, we have heavy traffic. Rabbi Zeira, Rami Matnitana Breita, Umishane. Rabbi Zeira brings the Mishnah, but then he brings an opposing Breita, and then tries to reconcile. Tznan. The Mishnah that we quoted before, Mivi get vavadimenu, a shliach that brings a get and then he loses it, mitzaola alter, if he finds it immediately, kasher. Bimlav, pasul. If not, it's pasul. That's the Mishnah that we bought to question our Mishnah, or the diokat of our Mishnah. And then Rabba reconciled between them by saying that it matters what the circumstances are as to whether the get is valid after time or not valid after time. Viramini, here's the bright that the Rebbe Zera brought. Matzah get isha b'shuk. If he finds a bill of divorce in the marketplace, bizman shabal modeh, if the Baal says, yes, I gave the get, yakzir the isha, then you can give it back to the woman. Ain't a baal modeh, if the husband does not agree with it or he says, I never gave it, lo yakzir, lo lezeh, velo lezeh. You don't give it back to either party. You don't give it back to the woman because the husband is denying the fact that he gave the get, and not to the husband because then the husband can use that get as an evidence of the fact that he paid the ktubah. You say, look, I have the get in my hand. I must have paid her ktubah. So we don't return it to either party. Not to the woman because maybe she wasn't divorced. Not to the man because maybe she is divorced and he has yet to pay her ktubah. And this would be evidence of the fact that he has paid off her ktubah. Or the Rashba suggests, and we don't give it back to the husband because we're afraid if we give it to the husband that he will use it in the future. Meaning that it's an invalid document now. It's an invalid document, then if he utilizes it in the future, it'll be problematic. But here it says in this braita, bizman shabal modeh yakzir the isha. That if the husband agrees, we give it back to her, v'afilu zman rubeh, even over a long duration of time. So the same problem that is raised by our Mishnah is also raised by this braita, which is, you have the Mishnah in Gittin, which says that time is important. If you get it back immediately, you're okay. If you have a delay in getting it back, then you're not okay. Our Mishnah seems to indicate it doesn't matter how much time elapsed. And this break also seems to indicate it makes no difference how much time elapsed. And both of them have the same idea, which is that the husband is agreeing that he gave the document. Our Mishnah, the Gemara was Midayek. Over here, the Breita says it explicitly that the husband agrees. That's why the Rishonim have a hard time with our Mishnah and the Diokat of our Mishnah, which is, here the Breita had to say it explicitly. Our Mishnah, we're saying, oh, it didn't have to say it, we can be Midayek it. So the Gemara says, well, many of the Rishonim ask, this Breita said that the Baal's Modeh, and it says it explicitly. So why doesn't our Mishnah need to say it explicitly as well? How are you certain that it's a diok out of our Mishnah? So that's what, Balei Tosafot on the previous Amud, many Rishonim are trying to figure out what compelled the Gemara to say that there is such a diok out of our Mishnah. Again, it's not a simple leap of faith, but that's what the Gemara is Medeyek. Umshani, kam b'makom she'ashariot mitzuyot, kam b'makom she'in ashariot mitzuyot. Rabbi Zeir's answer is, it's a difference between heavy traffic and low volume of traffic. Ikadamre, some say, behu shehuskuku, shnei Yosef ben Shimon, t'lon hader, that's a case where we know for certain that there are people with the same names, v'hainu d'rabo. And therefore Rabbi Zeir would be agreeing with Rabbi's position and saying that you need two things in order to worry about the get. You need heavy traffic, plus you need chuksuku. So then, when there's chuksuku, we won't give it back. The lo nader, we won't give it back in that case. But, in a case where it's not chuksuku, we would give it back. Igadamri, apagav de lo chuksuku. It's a case, even when there wasn't evidence of people being there, lo nader, we still will not give it back. Upliga de rabo. And Rabbi Zeira argues on rabo. This is where the Gemara brings, there's a dissenting opinion to Rabbi's position, that's Rabbi Zeira. The Gemara does not bring Rav Huna as the dissenting opinion, which is interesting because technically, Rav Huna and Rabbi Zeira now have the same opinion, if Rav Huna really believed that that was the Psak Halacha, and that's why it's evidence of the fact maybe Rav Huna does not hold like that. So now, in this case, the difference between them will be, Rabba believes you need two things in order to invalidate the get. You need heavy traffic, and you need evidence of the fact that people share those names. For Rabbi Zeira, you only need one thing. You need heavy traffic. That's enough. Heavy traffic will automatically invalidate the get. Yeah, chuzuku also would be problematic. Clearly there, he believes if chuzuku will be a problem or heavy traffic will be a problem. Bishlam Rabba lo amar Rabbi Zeira. I understand when, according to Rabba, it didn't hold like Rabbi Zeira, but titin ali malei dekshuye. He liked using our Mishnah as the question. Meaning that he feels that I'd rather ask a stira between Mishnayot, which is our Mishnah here in Baba Metzia, versus the Mishnah in Gittin. And therefore, the reconciliation involves two pieces, which is both heavy traffic and the fact of huskuku, that we know for certain, or there is a certain amount of evidence. Ela Rabbi Zeira, my time alo mark Rabba. Why didn't Rabbi Zeira hold like Rabba? Because he's using the Breita as the stira to the Mishnah in Gittin. Amlecha mi katoni He says, our Mishnah, the diuk is not so obvious. The Mishnah doesn't say, if he says give it, you should give it. Even for a long duration of time. He says, maybe when he says give it, we give it. Mean that our Mishnah doesn't give you any time elapsement. Since it doesn't give you any time elapsement, you're making a diuk that it says, if he says give it, give it. How do you know what the time frame of that is? Maybe the time frame of that is immediately, versus what you're suggesting, that it's a long duration. How do you know what it is? Now again, Rab is going to say that it's a Mishnah gives no time frame at all. So once you don't give a time frame, and you really believe it, oh, it's only la'alter, and you know that diuk's going to be made out of the Mishnah, then you should specify the time. The fact that there's no time specified means that it means any amount of time. So that's what Rab is going to say. But Rabbi Zeir says, as Rashi notes over here, Ava Braita, how come you can't say the same thing about the Braita? The Braita also doesn't give a time elapsement. It simply says that if the Baal agrees, you give it back. So he says, Ava Braita, lech l'shnui achi, came into Tana Beheji, yakzir li'isha. So this is what Rashi points out, is that since the Braita explicitly says you give it back to the woman, havale lifluge ben alto lezman rubeh, there you would have to make a differentiation in time. It's not similar to Mishnah. Rashi notes the difference between the Braita and the Mishnah is that the Braita says specifically that if the husband says it, you give it back. Now, if it does not qualify it with the time frame, then the assumption is that means any time frame. Then our Mishnah never says explicitly that you give it back when the husband says give it back. You only give it back because we made a diuk out of the Mishnah. You're making a diuk out of the Mishnah, then saying, based on that diuk, there's no time frame? The author of the Mishnah didn't have to deal with the time frame. That's not what he's talking about. That's your diuk out of the Mishnah. That's not what he's dealing with. And therefore, he doesn't have to specify it. Maybe it means the altar. So that's what Rabbi Zeir says. Rabbi Zeir says, I have an explicit braita that says you give it back. And the fact that the time of the braita didn't qualify with the time means there is no time limit. But then you were creating this out of a diuk, out of the Mishnah, which is not even clear that the diuk is right. And even if you say the diuk is right, the Bala Mishnah didn't qualify it because that's not what the main purpose of his statement was. The main purpose of his statement was what's written in the Mishnah, not what's not written in the Mishnah. And therefore, he didn't create a qualification of time. But that means that maybe he really meant the altar, that you can only do it immediately. So Tosafot says two things. First of all, ain't about modeh lo yakzir, that the husband says that I never gave the get, we don't give it back to her. The problem is that the Gemara in Gittin says that if a woman shows up in court and says, he divorced me, she is nemenet. That is because of a principle which, as we discussed there, is probably not applicable today, is that any shami zia peneha, a woman would not be so brazen to go into court and say she was divorced unless she really was divorced. She wouldn't raise up her head and say that unless she really was divorced. The fact that she's willing to walk into court and say that is pretty good evidence of the fact that she's divorced. So tell us what it says over here, without the husband saying that she is divorced. If she says, I'm divorced, we would have believed her. So why don't we just give her the get back over here? Because the husband's denial doesn't make any difference. If she's willing to come to court and say, this is my documented divorce, I was divorced, why doesn't she get the document back? So Tosfot says over here, there's a riuta. Over here, there's a problem. Because in general, the woman is not so brazen to come into court and say, I was divorced, unless she really was divorced. Over here, she has circumstantial evidence to her claim. She has a get that's there. So that will give her more strength to go into Beit Din and say it, and we can't say, she wouldn't raise up her head unless she really was divorced. Over here, she has a document backing her up. So here, she might be willing to lie or take a risk because she has circumstantial evidence backing up her position. And therefore, her claim in court no longer carries the weight that would have carried had she just shown up in court and said, I'm divorced without any evidence, because that is already stepping over what we'll call cultural norms in that time. And since it was stepping over the cultural norms, we believe her. But here, where she has a get backing her up, that's no longer stepping over cultural norms because she has evidence to prove her position and she'd be willing to lie. And so therefore, she loses a certain amount of nemanut. That's one thing. Second thing Tosfot says is, afilu zman rubeh, what are we worried about in terms of giving it back? When the husband agrees that the get belongs to the woman, why won't we give it back? Why is it over zman rubeh, why wouldn't we give back the get? What's the issue over here? It says, because kevin shemodesh menenafal, let us just give her the get as evidence of the fact that she was divorced. I mean, the husband says she was divorced. She says she was divorced. We don't have the get. We don't give the get back to her. Okay, why wouldn't you give the get back to her? Even if it's not a valid get, it's someone else's get, just give it to her so she has a document of evidence that she was divorced. the validity of the get is irrelevant at this point because both parties agree they were divorced. So the get will only serve as a proof text, not as the actual document of divorce. That's what I mentioned before. He has the ability to generate or to make a claim that I divorced her from here to forward. Because he has the ability to divorce her today, therefore he's believed to say that she is divorced prospectively. But here he makes a claim that I already divorced her in the past. Just like he's not believed retroactively to say that he divorced her, therefore he's also not neeman prospectively. And therefore, when we say return the get, means that this is going to be the get that creates the divorce over here. We will not allow him to be divorced without the giving of the get. So what Tosfot says over here, it's pretty big chiddush, is that Tosfot says that if the husband wants to say that she is divorced prospectively and that's all he said, then we believe him because he can go today, hand her a get, and have her be divorced. The fact that he's saying that this was the document and she is divorced, so we give him nemanut because of the fact that he could do it on his own right now. But if he makes a claim that in the past we got divorced and this is the document evidencing that, he's not believed about that because he can't control what happened in the past. He can control right now getting divorced from here to forward, but he can't control what happened in the past, and therefore he does not have nemanut. And Tosfot says that spills over and makes it that not only does he not have believability with regards to the past, he also doesn't have believability with regards to the future. And that means that anytime the get is dated prior to today's date, the husband is not believed to say that this, we are divorced. And what we do is we actually take the document that he says was the document of divorce, we get edim misira, and he hands the get to the woman. We say yakzir. Yakzir means not just give it back to her. It means husband hands the get to the woman in order to be divorced now. The problem then you're left with in that scenario, according to Tosfot, is if the get is dated from a much earlier date and you're handing it in now, you have a predated get. And that's a problem, meaning that here you're using the same document, date that's further back. So Tosfot makes a claim here that you're returning the get to the woman, and you're divorcing her with this get, seems somewhat problematic. The next Tosfot discusses it, but here he doesn't. And that would be, you would understand why there would be Rishonim would disagree with Tosfot on this point, and say that when you return the get, you're returning the get to the woman as a document of evidence, not as a document of divorce. And therefore, when the Baal agrees, we hand her that document of evidence. When the Baal disagrees, we don't hand her the document of evidence of the divorce, because there are implications of divorce that go beyond the divorce itself. So yes, the husband might agree with the divorce, but even when there's a long time that's elapsed, if we hand her back the document, you have other issues that will come up. Yes, she's divorced. Yes, you can give her the document as evidence of the divorce, but the document as evidence of the divorce also has implications in terms of if she has yet to collect her ketubah, or she's going after encumbered property. That does have implications, and therefore we would not give her this document if it's really invalid as a raya to her divorce, because not only is it evidence of the divorce, it's also evidence of monetary impact, and that we don't want to give her. And that's what you could argue over here. Even though they're both agreeing that they're divorced, if a long time has elapsed, we won't give the document back because it's an invalid document. And as a document of proof, it's also not a problem in terms of her being divorced. Yes, she's divorced. But as a document of proof, it has implications beyond the divorce itself, like tuba, collections, and all those sorts of things, and that we don't want to give her. And that's why you wouldn't give back the document. Not like what Tosfot says over here, that we don't want to give it. The divorce never really happened, and now you have to create a new divorce. No, it's because the document has broader implications than simply divorce. All right, so now the Gemara says here, L'manda amar l'Rabbi Zeru, makum shasherot mitzuyot, afagav shlo huskuhu shnei Yosef ben Shimon. And according to the one who says that Rabbi Zeru argues on Rabba, and therefore, when there's high volume of traffic, we worry about the get being exchanged, even without knowledge of the fact that there are two people with that name. Upligi the Rabba and he argues on Rabba, but my kamiflige. What is their shorish machloket? What is their machloket here as to whether you need both items or only one item? Rabba savar tatani kol masse beitin. The Mishnah says, kol masse beitin harizei yachzir. Any action of beitin is given back. Harizei yachzir. The ishtakach ve beitin askin. It's a case where you found the document in the beitin itself. And Beitin is a place where there is heavy traffic. So the only reason that you would give it back is because lo zuku yachzir. That's only because we don't have any evidence of the fact that there are other people with that name. So even though you're in the presence of an area where there's high volume, we're still allowing you to give it back. Why are we allowing you to give it back? It must be because we don't have evidence of the fact that there are other people with this name. Had they had evidence of that, they wouldn't have given it back. The Mishnah doesn't say any action of Beitin that's found in Beitin. It says Kol Maaseh Beitin Yachzir Ktani. It just says any action of Beitin is given back. Ulolam Dishtakach Abrai. And it was found somewhere else. It was found outside the Beitin. So you have no evidence of the fact that this is a scenario of high volume. So what Rabbi Zera is going to say is that's a scenario of low volume. It's a Maaseh Beitin that was found in a low volume or low trafficked area, and that's why we give it back. Had there been high traffic, we wouldn't give it back. Rabbi says, no, the case is a case. It's a Maaseh Beitin in the Beitin. You found the document in the Beitin itself, and that's a place of high traffic. So high traffic, the Mishnah still says, give it back. So what must be the only mitigating factor is the fact that we don't know that there are two people with that same name. And that's what leads to the difference in their opinions. Rabbi Yirmi Amar, Kigon Duka Amrei Edim, Me'olam Lo Chatamnu, El Al Get Echad Shel Yosef Ben Shimon. That the scenario here is a case where the Edim say we never signed on another document with this name in it. So, if they only sign on one document with this name, and their names are found on this document, then we're pretty certain that this is the original get. So we don't have to worry about it. They only sign on one get that ever had this name in it. And the husband saying, yes, I gave the get. The woman saying, yes, I got the get. And it dropped. So now, even over a long duration of time, we're going to give the get back to the woman because we have evidence by both parties agreeing that there was a get. Plus, the Edim are saying we never signed any other document with that name in it. So then this can't be another get. There's only one get with their signatures on it that has that name in it. Where it says, Yochi Mada Memra. So then, what's the question? Of course you would give it back. There's so much evidence to the fact that this is a valid get. What would even be the Hava Mina not to give it back in this case? I would have thought, maybe we'll go further and say that not only is they have the same name, and the wives have the same names, but the Edim have the same names. So maybe we shouldn't give back the document. It's a complete duplication. Kamash Malan, then we don't worry about that. That would be the Chiddush then, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah. But that's why you would give it back. I mean, to reconcile between the Mishnah and the Braita about why over long durations you're allowed to return it, those are scenarios where it's so obvious that the contract really is not another contract, not another divorce, because same Edim, same people, they say we never signed on another document with those names. It's pretty good evidence of the fact that this is the same document that you lost before. So now Tosfot says, so for Omer HaBaal, Shuoto Yosef. The Baal here has to agree that he's the name in the document, and that the Edim only signed on this. V'im Tomar, Halok Shein Edim Omrim Kein, Inu Ne'eman Lomar Shu Shelo. Wait a minute, without the Edim saying that they signed on the document, the husband would not be believed to say that it was his get. I mean that, yeah, it's mine, and I gave it to her. So then, Lama Yei Ne'eman Lechush, Shem Lachar Chatmu, V'lo Lazeh. So why, when the Edim come along and say that, oh yeah, yeah, we signed on a document, we only signed on the one document with that name in it, why does that give him more believability over here? Lechush Shema Lachar Chatmu, V'lo Lazeh. Maybe they signed on someone else with that name and not this guy. I mean that they said they signed on one document with Yosef ben Shimon in it. Great. How do you know that it's this Yosef ben Shimon? There might have been another Yosef ben Shimon. Signed on the document. They have no idea who the guy was. Or they can't remember who he was. They can't identify him. They just said we signed on one document that had Yosef ben Shimon's name in it. So then, who says it's the same Yosef ben Shimon? Maybe it's a different Yosef ben Shimon. Unlike Rashi's view over here, which is that they do know who the Yosef ben Shimon is, and they're actually identifying him. V'yesh lamar. Daf ki'en edim ma'she'enu ne'aman. The reason that the husband's not believed over here, even though I know that it's mine, the fee should be safek omer shehu shelo. A person in his own mind will justify and say that it is his get because he knows he lost a get. He knows he divorced his wife and they're looking for a get. Now they found it. So even though he's not certain about the veracity of this get or the lineage of this get, he'll say it's mine because in the end he did give a get, and why not say it's mine because I have nothing to lose over here. So that's what we're afraid of. So a person will, without strong evidence, say, yeah, it's my get. But when Edim come and back that up, then we'll say that it's more than just simply him speculating about the get. So what Tosfot says is the failure of the husband to be believed over here is not because he's not Ne'eman. He is Ne'eman. But our fear is that he will not be so careful because he lost a get. They found a get with his name in it. So say, yeah, it's mine. Because he knows he lost a get, and that's enough of a reason for him to say, yeah, it's mine, even though he doesn't have strong evidence to the fact. But if we could find another piece of evidence that backs up his claim, then we will restore his nemanut, and that's what happens over here. The Edim are saying that we only sign him one, and he's saying, this is mine. Together, they create a scenario where the Baal goes back to his normal nemanut because of the fact that he's saying it's mine. And the Edim are backing up that fact, so that takes away our chashash that he's just saying it because he wants to say it. Sounds like he really is telling the truth in this case. Again, that's what Tosafot says over here, that the Edim would not lie. Because the Edim have no benefit from this. So they're not going to say a false statement just to help out this guy and say that this lost get is found because they have no benefit from it. So we can be Neman on the Edim to tell the truth. Do they recognize it or they don't recognize it? If they do recognize it, that will give bolster the husband's position that it is the get. If they don't recognize it or they don't say we only signed on one document, then we will not believe the husband because the Edim have no incentive to lie. They have no benefit from lying and saying, oh, we only signed on one document with that name in the whole world. Well, they don't need to say that. They don't gain anything from saying that. So when they say that, we believe them. That gives the strength to the husband's claim. Here he gives a siman muvhak. He gives a siman that there's a hole next to that letter in the get. So that's a serious siman that he knows that that's his get. Bedavka b'tzadot ploni. That's only if he says that the hole is right by that letter. Aval nekev ba'amalo. There's a hole in the get. That's not enough because that's not a siman muvhak. That's something that could appear in many gitin. Ravashim is spekele. Ravashi himself is uncertain as to whether simanim idoraita idorabanan. Whether simanim are mina Torah or midorabanan. This is a sugya that's going to be discussed later on in the Gemara in Chav Zayin Amud Bet about this exact question about whether simanim are doraita or idorabanan. As Rashi notes of here, Tosfon on the next Amud notes the same thing. The big difference is what type of level of siman do you need? If simanim are doraita, then Rashi says over here, even the smallest siman would be sufficient in order to make a claim. You won't need a siman muvhak. You just need a siman in order to validate the get here, get the document back, get the aveda back. On the other hand, if you believe there is simanim aro derabanan, then only when you have a siman muvhak will we say midoraita, you give it back. But without a siman muvhak, we would not give it back. Just a normal siman would not be enough. So that's where Ravashi's safek is over here. How strong a siman do we need over here? Do we need a siman muvhak because simanim are derabanan, and therefore I need a siman muvhak? Or do I say that simanim are deoraita, and I don't even need a siman muvhak, I could even have even less of a siman? Now the truth is, Rashi asks over here, why don't you prove it? The fact that Ravashi says that you need a hole next to a specific letter shows you that you need a siman muvhak. Yeah. That would prove that it's simanim are derabanan because you need a siman muvhak in order to do it. If it was deoraita, you wouldn't need such a strong siman. Rashi says there's no proof from that because over there, he's besafek. He doesn't know. So in a case, he's going to go the chumrah. When you pass in the case, you're always going to go the chumrah. If you don't know what the psak is, that's what he has here. He doesn't know whether it's derabanan or deraita. He's going to be a choshesh that simanim are only derabanan, and that requires a siman mufak. We won't let you give back the document unless he has a siman mufak because I just don't know what the outcome is. So Rashi says it's no proof because you can always go say he's going the chumrah because of the safek. It's not evidence of the fact that he really believes that simanim are derabanan. The truth is that the whole chashash of Shnei Yosef ben Shimon's here is a chashash derabanan. So even if simanim are derabanan, why doesn't it work to overcome a chashash derabanan? So there you could argue either that ke'en doraita tikein, that the chachamim made the chashash like a doraita level chashash once they put that takana in place, and therefore the simanim derabanan cannot overcome that problem. Or when we're talking about something that's really a takana of an extension of a din Torah, or we're dealing with Isurim, over there the Rabbanan didn't invoke this idea that Simanim Derabanan can overcome those issues or overcome those problems. And that's what we're seeing evidence of in Rashi and the Tosafot, as well as the Rishonim that are trying to distinguish between the Simanim Derabanan here and the problems that we're worried about with regards to a get. Because a get is Mina Torah. A get is something that's isur. A get is something where there's a takana derabanan and it's arayot. So therefore, it might have stringencies that cannot be overcome by another din derabanan. So now, Rabbi Barachana irkas legita be midrasha. He had a get that he was the appointed agent on, and he lost it inside the Beit Midrash. Amar isimana idli begave Itviat Eina Itle Begave. They found it. They found the get in the Beit Midrash. And he says to the people who found it, if you want, I have a siman. If you want, I can identify it. I recognize the document. I recognize the handwriting. I know that this for sure is the get that I dropped. I drew an ele, and they gave it back to him. So now he has a problem. Amar, lo yadana, imishum simana adru an ele. I don't know if they returned it maybe because I gave a siman about the get, or kasavre simanim doraita, and they hold that simanim are doraita, and that's enough of a reason to give back the get, even though it wasn't a siman mufak. But since it was a siman, and simanim are doraita, it's enough reason to give back the get. Imishum tviat eina adru an ele. Or maybe they gave it back because I could eyeball it and say, I know that this is the handwriting. I know that this is the get that I took. The dafka tsur midrabanan. But then that would only be true if you're talking about a young Talmud Chacham. But regular people not. This also goes to a Gemara that we're going to see later on. In terms of a tsur midrabanan, we're talking about here someone who always tells the truth. Since he always tells the truth, he can make claims through a tviat ayin. Because he only lies for very specific situations, which the Gemara will discuss over there. But otherwise, he always tells the truth. But then that would limit the application of this din. This din would only be applicable in a case where we're talking about a young Talmud Chacham was always believed, but tviat eina. Because the siman was not enough. Simanim are only midrabanan. That wouldn't have been enough. Then if you believe that simanim are doraita, and the reason they returned to them is because simanim doraita, that would have broad application. That wouldn't just apply to Rabbo or tsur midrabanan, that would apply to anybody. As long as you have a siman, you would return the document. Now Rashi notes this over here, and Tosfot again seconds this at the top of Yud Tet Amud Aleph, which is that the difference between a get and monetary matters is the ability of Beit Din to intervene in those matters. Which is that if you believe simanim are do'oraita, then simanim do'oraita, even a small siman would be enough for us to allow a get to be returned, allow an aveda to be returned, all of those items, because the Torah recognizes simanim. Then if you believe that simanim are do'rabanan, then a siman muhak would work do'oraita. If you have a really good, strong siman, like a dot next to the, or a hole next to this letter, that would be a really siman mufak, and we would give the get back, even if you believe that simanim d'rabanan, because that means that a siman mufak, always d'oraita, is valid. But, if you only believe that they are d'rabanan, and he brings a broad type of siman, not a siman mufak, but just a general siman, over there we're going to say you don't give back the get, but we do allow you to give back an aveda based on that. What's the difference between them? So Rashi explains over here, v'davka ba'aveda shehefker beitin hefker. Therefore, it only has application by aveda because Beit Din can intervene and say hefker Beit Din hefker, which is basically can disown you of your property. Of amidati sura lo samchinan, we won't rely on that for isur. So Tosfot makes a distinction here in the application of simanim between isur and mamon. In monetary matters, simanim derabanan will have application, and we will allow you to return items or to do things based on the simanim that you bring. On the other hand, with things that are dinim d'oraita, since the simanim here are d'rabanan don't allow it to go through in that case, either because they cannot invoke the principle of hefker beit din hefker, or they don't want to invoke the principle, which we know they have, to be okir kiddushim mi'ikara, which is a very powerful but dangerous tool, and therefore they don't want to invoke it over here. Or you have to say that when they instituted it ke'ein d'oraita. Which is that when they instituted, they kept it at the Torah level, and the Torah level says that simanim don't work. And if simanim don't work, then it's not going to be good enough to work unless you have some other vehicle like hefker, beit din hefker. But without that other vehicle, they did not let their simanim work, and therefore by a get, it will not work. So that has implications in terms of whether it's doraita or derabanan. Doraita will allow you to use it even by isurim, even by get. The Rabbanan, it will only work by monetary matters, it will not work by Isurim. Okay, we're gonna stop here, 7 lines down on the top of Yud Tet Amud Aleph.